Okay, warriors, you are listening to Unqualified Therapists. Remember, stay wild and weird.
Hey, warriors, this is Amy.
And I'm Sarah. We started this podcast because mental health is complicated and the stigma surrounding it can make us feel alone.
So we are here to share authentic stories in order to normalize and prioritize mental health.
We believe in professional therapy. We both use it on our own healing journeys.
But we also know it isn't one size fits all. So we are here to provide tools from our own experiences,
as well as those from our guests and professionals that come on the show.
Thank you for being here as we navigate the complexities of mental health and mental illness together.
Remember, hold on, warriors. We're gonna make it. Warrior.
Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of The Unqualified Therapist.
Y'all.
And the qualified today.
That's Yay! Right. Get excited. Dr. Katie's in the house.
Ooh, ooh.
Oh, I don't know how qualified I feel about this one, but I'll do my best.
Yes, we're all going to do our best to understand the story that we have for you today. If you don't have Netflix, where have you been for the last 15 years? In fact, probably longer because, you know, DVDs.
Yeah, when you had to send them back in the mail and you had to pick the next one and you could only get one and at a time, it was so stressful.
It really was. The best explanation is Kelly Kapoor from The Office, though, giving how Netflix works with the queue. You should find that episode.
I was thinking the other day, because there's so much on there now to watch, there was a point where I like almost finished everything, like the documentaries at least.
That's like the end of the internet.
Like a long, long, long time ago when it first started, there was not that much on there.
I have read the internet.
I have read the entire Netflix, all of it. And now I get to, there's too many choices. I'm like, whatever's in the top 10, that's what I watch and that's about it.
Yeah.
And that this was in the top 10.
Yeah. So today, folks, we are talking about the Netflix series American Nightmare. It is a documentary, so this was a true story, the true story of Denise Huskins and Aaron Quinn. This is from a wild point of view, and Netflix takes you through it, which is kind of nice because there is a Dateline and a 2020 on it, but nobody does it like Netflix. So they have a harrowing home invasion. There's a kidnapping. The year is 2015. And the whole entire point of this is that it is real. So Denise is truly kidnapped, taken from her home for several days. And Aaron, the boyfriend, he reports it. And they immediately believe that he has done this and that he has killed her, taken her somewhere. She is gone. Denise returns home. And I don't know if you remember me saying this, 2015. Do we remember what movie just came out like a year before this all happened? It's a movie called Gone Girl by Gillian Flynn.
Oh, right.
Yes. And so there's a very similar
Which
story.
Plays into this.
Yes. And so
I
the
think
police.
It's important to remember.
It is very important to remember. Mm-hmm. The police believe that she has made this whole thing up. So go watch it if you haven't already. I should have said at the beginning there, that's a spoiler. It really did happen because you don't really know at the beginning.
Netflix does a good job of, if you don't know the story, taking you down this wild right. path where it's one of those things where it's stranger than fiction. Like it's just hard to believe that it's possible. And that's what we're talking about today is believing things that people say. And it's called American Nightmare for those of you who want to take a look. I don't know if it's in the top 10 anymore, but it was for a very long time.
Yes, with good reason, I believe.
Oh, God, it's fascinating, captivating.
Fascinating, terrifying, maddening, all of those things on multiple levels all at the same time. I will tell you, I can watch pretty much anything by myself. I don't get freaked out. I finished it while my husband was not at home and was not going to be home until the next afternoon. And I was like,
Oh no. So you were sleeping.
I mean, I have an alarm system. I feel very safe where I live, but I was like, well, I probably could just stay up all night.
Yeah, right?
Stay on guard.
Yes. I may have looked out for you a few times.
I mean, home invasions are like my biggest fear. Yeah. Top three, we'll say, biggest fears. And I hate them. Like, that just, and I don't know why I listen to true crime about them, because they're whatever, it probably plays into that. But I really, really get scared. Every creak, every this, every that. And I was explaining to my daughter the other day, I don't know how many people I've told this to, probably not many, but like 85% of the reason that I bought a townhouse in between two other townhouses was because I'm terrified of home invasions.
Wow. I didn't know that.
And there's like statistics to show that in townhomes, especially if you're not on the end, that like you don't have like it just doesn't happen because there's a million people to see and hear.
Yes.
Plus it's Ryan Holmes. You can hear everything. So,
well, I really hope there never is one, because they're sure as shooting not going to believe you.
Right.
With all of this evidence to the contrary.
They'll be like, but you live in the townhome in the middle.
Yeah, like, it's not possible.
Oh my gosh. Okay, Dr. Katie, help us understand
something
like this happens and people don't believe.
Like, walk us through, when he walks into the police station, like, what are your thoughts as he's telling this story?
You know,
and the immediate reaction from the police and detectives.
So I have tried to think about this, right? Like, I want this to make sense. I want to be able to give you a package to say, here's why this happened this way. And I think so that we can say, and it's never going to happen this way again. That's usually why we want to make sense of things. And honestly, I will say there was one thing he said to, I think it was like the 911 operator, that I misinterpreted, that I wonder if they did. When she said, why are you calling now? He said, I was tied up until a little bit ago, or something along those lines. Yes! And my thought was, tied up with what? Not, he was literally tied up.
Literally tied up.
But I don't know if the police had access to that or not, but like when you watch it, I mean, like I said, my husband was out of town. I may have had a couple drinks while I was watching it.
He's like, I had some conference calls I had to get to first.
I was tied up.
Zoom calls, nothing.
I honestly, it is just so disturbing to watch someone go in trusting that he's going to be heard, that he just has to tell his story, which is the story, the truth, and they're gonna help him. And you see it shift very quickly to, you're lying, we don't believe you. And then this tactic that we see all the time where they get threatened with, we know this other thing. And often what happens is people break at that point and they start admitting to things that they didn't do.
Yep.
And he did not do that. Not even when they lied to him and said that he failed the lie detector, which by the way, lie detectors are not admissible in court. Like it's a lie detector.
And you should never agree to it. Never agree to it. Ever, ever, ever.
All it does is, I actually know a little bit about it. When I was on internship, part of my rotation was at the sexual responsibility treatment program. And everybody there had to take multiple lie detectors, polygraphs. They had to take one for what they called their index offense. So the thing that got them there, then they had to pass that. They had to pass their sexual history. And then they had to pass an annual one. But the thing to remember is that really all it does is measure your reactivity. And to me, I'm pretty sure if you were asking me questions about something I didn't do, and I felt that my life depended on answering in such a way that you believe me, pretty sure I'd be pretty darn reactive to these questions. Yeah.
It's like when you pass a cop and you're not doing anything wrong, but you still have like anxiety.
Me, every
over
time
it.
I pass a cop.
Same. Me too.
I mean, I'm often speeding, but like,
same. I'm going under the speed limit, and I'm like, they're probably going to get me for that.
Yeah. But I mean, it's just, it's baffling that this can happen. And I do think that one of the worst things is the loss of trust. We see it happen in this documentary, and I think we experience it, like we personally experience it by watching this. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think the main thing that we should consider in this case and in any case like it is called confirmation bias, because mm-hmm. the police, their job is to solve it. So what do you do to solve a case? You have to come up with a theory. So then once you have your theory, you use confirmation bias, probably not knowingly since it's a bias, but anything that fits that theory, they go with. Anything that doesn't gets discarded. And unfortunately, we see this happen once you know how things really went down, you see it happen time and time and time again in this case. And I think to an extreme, which is why I said it's really important to think about Gone Girl preceding this. They almost had this perfect setup for here's an explanation for this. This will make it all mm-hmm. make sense. The cop's job is easy. And then they just go from there. But multiple lives could have been ruined because of that.
I'm just like, where's the good detective work? Like, nobody went and like even did anything. And the fact that they took his phone when he said to them, they're going to be contacting me on my phone, they turned it off and took it away. It was just immediate. So it was immediately against him. You did it. You murdered her. She's in the water or whatever.
Right. Well, here's another confirmation bias, right? Mm-hmm. If you watch 48 Hours, Mysteries, any of those, it is often the boyfriend, the husband, the lover, you know, whatever. But lazy.
A little bit. And then immediately when she returns, it's like it flips on her, and now she's so evil and the worst thing in the world. And it was just like this weird like pivot. It wasn't like an I'm sorry at all to him. Never apologized to that guy. Just pivoted all the anger and rage to the girl. And I was like, what? It was mind blowing.
But that's really interesting, right? Why anger and rage? I mean, and I know that they said, oh, we've wasted all of these resources, which we know they really didn't, because they weren't really investigating anything.
They didn't do anything. Yeah.
When there was the conversation where the detectives were told, the communication rep for the detective was told the words, destroy her. Mm-hmm. In a press conference, get on that press conference and destroy her. And so that's what he did. I mean, he ripped her apart. You know, she should be ashamed of wasting all of these resources mm-hmm. and the panic that she caused and all of the man hours wasted. I just think that's absolutely ridiculous. And it's another bias, you know, gender bias in pulling it, flipping it right back around on her. What I do have to say is, though, I saw footage on this documentary for the first time that wasn't in the 2020 or the Dateline episode. And that was the footage of like the doorbell cam of her walking across the street to come home when she was dropped off after being kidnapped, and she's got her bag and she's walking across the street. That video made me, and I knew that it had really happened. I knew someone had kidnapped her. I knew he had been caught, all of these things. I watched that video and I was like, wait, was she really kidnapped? Because, and this is the other question I wanted to ask you about, like, is there almost, I mean, I've been through a lot of trauma. I don't know that I've ever had a response that was like, she looked so calm, cool, mm-hmm. collected, like nonchalantly strolling across the street. And I was like, wait, is this real? Did she actually get kidnapped? And that was like, no, she did. You know this.
Yeah.
So it's just reactions like that.
I think we have to remember that trauma is so disorienting. Mm-hmm. That any reaction is possible. We also know that, you know, she felt like she had to be calm, cool, and collected around the kidnapper. Mm. And maybe she had not kind of dropped that demeanor yet. Also, she was being dropped at her father's house, where she mm-hmm. hadn't been in a while. Like,
I thought of it as like, First of all, Sarah, I thought the same thing at first. And then I had to think about it. And I was like, okay, she has like whatever it was, NyQuil. I don't even know what they ever figured out it was.
The drugs, yeah.
Some sort of drugs in her. And I think about, I try to put myself in that situation and I would be doing, in my head, I would be like, don't fuck this up. They'll turn around and get me again. Like I'm so close. Like I can see it. I can see it. Like I just need to like be that. I don't, who knows what it was, but those were the two things that I thought maybe attributed to that. But it also is similar to when we talk about how people experience grief differently. So if someone's out having fun a week after their husband dies, you know, case right here, somebody says, oh, well, she's over it. What the hell, lady? Like, no, I'm not. But like, there's that idea of like, it should look this way. If you're going to be scared, upset, I don't know, whatever, whatever emotion you think they should feel.
Yeah. And well, I think that's, sorry, go ahead, Katie. There.
No, I was just going to say, I think that's part of this whole confirmation bias thing, right? Or like this idea that things are supposed to be a certain way. When we see things that don't fit how we think they should be, we immediately judge it as wrong, bad, problematic, instead of saying, huh, this is interesting. Like, let me learn more about this response. Also, might that have been a variation of a freeze response, you know, in that situation?
Or the fawn, you know, flight, freeze, fawn, like just kind of acting. And I have done that. I've done that multiple times. That's kind of my, like, when I get into a situation with a male who is, I'm frightened. Like, I'm like, you're putting me in a situation that I feel threatened. I am in a fawn. I immediately start to try to turn on the charm, even like be overly kind.
Yes,
absolutely.
Yes.
I can't tell you how many times I have had that conversation in this room, in my office, when women are then upset, excuse me, that they, I hate to say revert, but that's what happens in situations where just physiologically and autonomically, they feel threatened by a man. They do the thing that has kept them safe or safest throughout their lives. So we can't fault someone for doing something that has worked.
Right. So much to think about. And that was what the police were basing all of their judgments off of, were reactions, responses. They weren't, quote, acting properly. Right. They weren't acting like someone who had been kidnapped would act. They weren't acting like the victim.
Well, yeah. And also,
yeah, what does that look like?
Right. Who knows what that really looks like?
Yes.
Right? It was
until the savior.
Yes,
thank God for that cop. Thank God for the woman cop.
Yeah.
You know, but I found myself thinking a lot about Dr. Christine Blasey Ford and, you know, her testimony and how she was treated and just publicly annihilated because she didn't fit what people thought a victim should look like, act like, express.
Or wait too long. And, you know, why would you wait? No. So if it really happened, why would you wait that long? Right. The reasons
are because no one's ashamed
endless.
Of those things being done to them.
Exactly.
Ever.
Right.
And no one's re-victimized by the whole process. I will say there was a point where, not to give away too much because I do want everyone to watch it and be terrified like I was, but if there was a point where it was Muster. I don't remember. Was he FBI? Or
I think he was a detective.
A detective.
Mm-hmm. He was the detective from the very beginning. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking, isn't that he was, first of all,
Colonel
he's an
Mustard
asshole.
From Clue.
Yes, Colonel yes, Mustard, yes.
From Clue. That's what I said to Mike. I was like, Clue.
Yeah.
The game. Yeah. He's from the game.
First thing I thought, but he said to Denise Huskins' mother something along the lines of, well, women who have been abused will often recreate that as adults.
Oh, that's,
I
forgot about that.
To throw something at my TV. I wanted to be like, oh, pardon me, sir. Please tell me more about this false information that you are sharing. And yeah, again, using
forgot.
To vilify a victim of a violent crime and also like blame a past trauma. And the first thing I thought was, okay, if there is a child acting out sexually or imitating sexualized behaviors, yes, my first thought is sexual abuse of some kind, including exposure to pornography. Mm-hmm. If a teenager is maybe acting out in some way, maybe we're calling normal teenage behavior acting out in some ways also, but an adult faking a kidnap and rape, there's just absolutely no connection there. And it just seemed like another attack on a woman. And I may have even paused at that point so that I didn't miss anything based on my rage at the moment.
Yeah. Yes. That was a weird tactic. Was it a tactic? Mm-hmm. Was he trying to get her to admit to something? Like, I don't understand. Or was it just him, more of the confirmation bias? Like, I just need to make this story fit what I think and quote know happened. So this is what I'm going to say.
I think so. Right. I mean, and like, what are you going to say to the victim's mom?
Yes. Like, I just want it to be over.
Which really, I mean, that is their, I think their job is to solve crimes, right? And mm-hmm. to figure out what happened. I think what often happens is they apparently get the message. Your job is to, you know, figure out what it was, prove it, prove that that was the thing, and move on.
Yeah. Solve as many cases as possible.
My theory. So with the FBI agent being the boyfriend of the new fiance.
Oh my God, I forgot about that until you said it.
I truly believe that he wanted to come in and save her. Mm-hmm. I think it was a setup. I think he paid the guy to do it. And then when it wasn't her, it all got completely messed up.
Yeah.
And I think he just wanted to come in and be like, look, I saved you from the bad guy. And that is so messed up. Like, so messed up. Yeah.
That's, I agree with that theory after watching it, because I was, I just kept, I'm like, why? Why else? I understand that this man who did the kidnapping had done similar things, not quite that extreme.
I mean, I would love to learn more about him. I'd love to see some personality inventories. Like, that would be fascinating, especially because it seems like he had identity issues going on while he had her captive. Mm-hmm. And in other situations too, it's fascinating. Like, wait, I can't be the person doing these things that I am literally doing as I speak.
Yes. So do you, like, is there anything that you know out of like the DSM or any experience you have where somebody can do something horrible like this? So for our listeners, if you haven't seen it, the kidnapper has like a crisis of conscience at several different points of this whole thing where he tells her, I'm not going to do that to you. I'm not going to hurt you. I can't do this. I can't believe I'm doing this. And he kind of gets like panicky or I have to do this. And then previous
victims were telling him. Too,
right.
Which we don't think existed, but or at least
but
I don't.
My question about the associates,
or is it the FBI
they still
agent?
Claim they still claim that there was two sets of legs.
Mm-hmm. I wonder if someone helped him with the kidnapping, right? With the home invasion, the kidnapping, and then that was that. He paid them whatever. Mm-hmm. And then I don't think I hate to say evidence in this regard, because there was so little evidence one way, so much another way, but like, it didn't sound like there was necessarily evidence of anyone else being present with her.
Except for, did he just play noise to pretend like there were other people? She heard the car, she heard the people. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Yeah.
I mean, 'cause she couldn't see anything.
I'm scared about, like, who are those other people? That's what I was thinking. As soon as it was over, I was like, somebody go get them.
Yeah, that was the only thing I was still kind of afraid of by the very end of it. But then I was like, okay, well.
The previous victims of his, once he had been caught and they were, you know, talking and found other victims and were able to tie things together, had said that he even had, like, a crisis of consciousness when he broke into a house.
Theme.
Yes, and was planning to rape this woman, and then she begged him not to, and he was like, I can't hurt you, and he left.
Mm-hmm.
He left her tied up, and so that's just, have you ever heard of that? Is that something that you can quantify? Is there a diagnosis?
There's not a diagnosis, although, you know, I certainly wonder about some personality issues, but it's interesting because we don't see what we would see in an antisocial personality disorder, even generally narcissistic personality, is a disregard for how the other person feels, how this is going to impact them. And what's confusing us is the fact that he's showing regard for it. I think something to consider that there is a phenomenon where men will attempt rape and then cannot complete the act. Something happens, and rape is much more about power and control than about sex. So maybe he kind of got enough of the power and control, and then that somehow was one step too far. I don't know. I would absolutely love to see an MMPI on this guy. Yeah. He's clearly intelligent. He had like a degree from Harvard Law, I think. Ex-military. And that makes me wonder about trauma for him. I don't know. I'm sure I could probably find that information. You know, was he active duty? Was he involved in anything violent? But yeah, if I can picture his face, and if I could do it without seeing his face, because it totally creeps me out, I would be willing to do a lot more research into this.
Yeah.
Just that whole part of it is fascinating to me. That's where I want to understand what makes you go so far and then stop and say like, this is wrong, and then do it again. Again and again and again. Like, that's what's confusing.
And he must have shown nothing towards his mother, because she so much was like, yes, of course, that's my son. Here's where he's at. He's at the cabin. Mm-hmm. You know, like, no even understanding he could possibly be bad.
Right.
Because just gave it up real easily. And then I'm like, have you not been to your cabin lately, friend? It's disgusting.
Yeah.
It was such a beautiful area. Mm-hmm. I was like, but he's destroyed it.
It was Lake Tahoe, right?
Yeah, Tahoe area, I think, yeah. Mm-hmm.
But is that also, is that a denial thing from mom? I feel like a lot of times that there's, when they catch people and they have the conversation with the parents, it's like, we had no idea, you know, but then all these other people knew, you know, and could say, there were indicators.
Yeah, I don't know that we know enough about that in this case.
You know, I did a TikTok deep dive, because that's what I do as soon as there's true crime. And so old girlfriends came on and said it. But sometimes I think in those situations, people are like, hey, this is my 5 minutes.
Absolutely.
So it was like, yeah, he was kind of weird, and then just tried to make it. I'm like, you went out with him one time. So I don't know that anyone really saw that either. I mean, he was, and then did they show that in that particular documentary of him being interviewed by the news for one of his clients, or was that in 2020?
I don't think I saw that.
I think that was in the 2020. Yeah. So like when he was an attorney, I mean, he was fully functioning as an attorney out in the world. I don't know. I don't know much about these sorts of things, and as hence the unqualified. I would think there is, though, a break of some sort from the trauma of being at war and in, I don't know how he served, but I think there's something there that like, it's almost like, it's like a split between,
I would be shocked if we couldn't find something in his history. Now, it's not always simple, and it's not often one thing, but this really, I mean, just the way he had, like you said, this crisis of conscience, but then engaged in the behavior again and again and again. It's like he knows this is wrong. He certainly does. He's demonstrating that. He's seeing that. Yet he can't stop himself.
It's like overall, he was addicted to it.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But there's this different quality, though, or something, I think, with him. I just really, something was missing behind his eyes.
And I wonder if it's like a socially awkward thing. Right. I don't think he was ever really, I don't know what the word is. We're not using normal. So I don't think he was ever really like just someone who you could be like, something's not off. Right. Like something's off with him. You would think that maybe before even, you know, that there was just something a little bit different.
Right.
Right. But maybe it was just
because
weird.
Things like
not
that.
Like something that you would predict.
That you'd be like, oh, he's scary.
Right.
I would love if someone would go interview him in prison. I mean, that would be so fascinating.
It's just, I think we feel this need to understand because we want to be able to say like, okay, I want to protect myself from these things.
Which is our bias, right? Mm-hmm.
That's like, our bias, yeah.
We're mm-hmm. looking to assuage our own anxiety about these mm-hmm. things happening. That's why we want to talk about it. That's why we want to figure it out. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, we can't do a fantastic job, right? Of, at least not from a CBT standpoint, finding enough right. evidence to make us feel comfortable living in this world.
Yeah. I just think about whenever I think of these things and when we start to talk and say like, okay, he served, he had this trauma. I always go back to the people who have also had trauma and have made mm-hmm. different paths and life choices for themselves. And so it just, that's where it's like, where is the disconnect? Why did he go down this path instead of maybe having like right. some OCD tendencies and like with control or an eating disorder, even with control or, mm-hmm. you know, just something that's like gaining that control somewhere else. Like why, what, where was that disconnect that went and something's, you know, snapped and he goes right. the other way. And it's like, that's the stuff that frightens
me. And that's why we're never going to not have these conversations. I don't think we're ever going to find it's this combination of genes plus this, plus that. It's such a complicated web of, mm-hmm. I think we either look at it as things going right or things going wrong. I really think, you know, the best explanation for things like this, or for anything really for all of us, is the diathesis stress model, which says that we are born with certain protective factors, right? Certain risk factors. But then it's the combination of that and our environment, the things that happen to us, the things that are done to us, the things that we experience that collectively determine how we then move through life, whether we end up with certain, you know, mental health diagnoses, certain issues that we have to deal with or not. I tend to think it's always a combination of those things, but we still can't even predict person to person what that's going to look like.
Right. What's that called again?
Diathesis stress model.
I'll look that up.
Mm-hmm. That's going way back. That's like 20 years ago on my master's program, but I still, I believe it. It's the thing to me that makes the most sense because I don't think anything is purely genetic. Other than certain syndromes and stuff, but from a mental health standpoint, that just doesn't make sense to me. We can always very quickly find something to kind of prove that wrong. And exactly what you're saying, Sarah, is people can experience trauma. They can experience essentially the same trauma and mm-hmm. go in multiple directions. So there's not any one thing that predicts point A to point B accurately.
Right. There's like a predisposition you can have mm-hmm. and then a triggering mm-hmm. moment from exactly. my understanding of my
That's
research
exactly right.
when I was trying to understand about my own self. And then with Scott mostly, like I was just mm-hmm. like, and we kind of pinpointed where that moment was. And it is interesting that predisposition, like, oh man, it's like you have a ticking time bomb and it can be, you know, like so many different things that you're just waiting to see, like, God, let's just walk that line and not hit that triggering moment. And so it is interesting that it kind of lives dormant.
Yeah. And I think too, it's often not just one moment. It's a combination of moments. That said, we can probably look at a bunch of different moments and say, right versus left, you know, this would have impacted positively or negatively.
Yeah, for sure.
Going back to the victims with Denise and Aaron, I just really just wanted to kind of redirect back to them because I tend to focus on it's like the person who did it because I'm like, why did you do this? I need to understand.
Yeah.
Like we just
said.
Well,
that would keep us safer,
yes,
right? If we
exactly.
could figure that out.
Yeah. But I just think it's so lovely that we were talking before we got, you know, on here, of course, and we were like, we have to hit record. We have to stop talking about these things off the record. We need to be on the record. But we were talking about how it's great that they've gotten married since then and have two kids. So, you know, and then Katie, you had brought up the point, like, I wonder if they're going to be, you know, helicopter parents and really watching over those kids.
What's parenting going to be like for them?
What's parenting going to be like? Right. And so I think it's just important for all of us, you know, the listeners, us, all of us to remember the impact these things have on people. And
and honestly, like, it's generational, right? We know mm-hmm. that trauma can be passed down generationally. Trauma can change our DNA. What are their children going to deal with mm-hmm. because of this situation?
Right.
And even their grandchildren, maybe. And I don't mean that in the most like horrible way, right? That, oh, like, they're all doomed. Just that it's never, again, it's never just one thing, right? It's never just that one situation, that incident, that person, even.
I think it's really important to mention the cop who Denise said that she needed a hero, and she had one in the police officer who solved and found her hair in the goggles to prove for sure that it was the truth that she was telling. And her name was Misty Caruso. I'm going to say it that way. I am not sure if that's correct. But it's important to say her name and to talk about her, which we just tried to Google. That's not what comes up on my three Google searches. I had to try something completely different because no one's going to talk about that part of it. And there are people out there who will fight to find the truth and do the right thing. And those people really are truly the heroes. And perhaps the reason that Denise won't have just as much trauma, right? Because she did have someone who spoke up for her and who did go to bat for her. And there's some, I don't know, light in this story for them because of this one woman. And I think that that was just something that was so important to the whole story and probably to the future of how the rest of their lives go.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for bringing that up.
Yeah, she was the real hero. I was like, yeah.
Seriously.
But, you know, we also were saying before we came on here, of course it was. Of course it was a woman who stepped in and said, something's up. Like, I need to figure this out. I have this evidence. People seem to be just not interested in it, but I'm going to put it together and figure out what's happening here. And because of her, you know, many other lives have probably been saved because he was not stopping. He was continuing to go, and he was escalating as he went. This was the first time he had taken someone out of their home, away from the home, to somewhere, another location that we know of.
Right.
And she was going to live in fear. Mm-hmm. They were going to live in fear forever. And I was so worried for them.
Right.
And this resolved that part of it too, mm-hmm. where they could at least like not have to look over their shoulder all the time.
Right.
I just want people to be believed when something happens to them.
And that is the thing, right? Yeah. Why do we not start from the assumption of truth?
Right. And work your way outward.
Exactly.
From that.
And really, and really just start with, I can't say really much at all, but I have a client who was just a wonderful human being who got involved in a very terrible legal situation. And she started finding things out on her own mm-hmm. to try to make sense of the situation. And it's come to the point where that will probably never see the light of day in the media. She is going to be the person taking the fall for a really horrible event, despite information that she has found, because the goal is to, there's a victim, let's find the perpetrator.
Right.
If it's one perpetrator, even better. If we can mm-hmm. tie it up really neatly and move on, great. And that seems to be how, at least, you know, cases that we have discussed and looked at, that's how they proceed. Mm-hmm. Instead of, what is the greatest truth of this situation? I will follow every loose end just to find out what happened, versus being able to pin this thing on this person.
Right. I mean, we've seen the cases time and again. We even covered one on here. We had another episode, and we'll link it in the show notes for you so you can go back and listen to that one too, where, you know, there was a serial rapist and the women kept going to the police and saying, I was raped mm-hmm. by this individual. Here's his name. Here's what mm-hmm. he looks like. And he would come in and just say, no, it was consensual. And they would say, oh, well, I mean, we don't have any evidence to the contrary, so We just have to believe him. I just want women to be believed when they tell authorities that they have been raped or assaulted or, you know, anything.
Yeah. Anything.
Sorry, I just, the part, and I'm going to give you a spoiler because it just broke my heart more than anything in the world. In the whole series, this part really broke me. They had her boyfriend's phone. They had Aaron's phone. They took it, they put it on airplane mode and kept it from him. In that time that it was on airplane mode, that the kidnapper, Matthew Mueller, called twice. And it was traceable. They would have found her. Mm-hmm. And she said, you could have prevented my second rape.
Mm-hmm.
Just by listening and believing.
It's bringing up, like, there's a culture now of just not trusting authorities. Yeah. And I feel like that's really upsetting. I went down that rabbit hole on TikTok with some attorneys watching them, and it's really good advice on how to handle certain situations. It can be as easy as getting a traffic stop, right?
Well, that's, I think, a cultural trauma, right? A societal trauma that comes from seeing all of these things and feeling like, would someone believe me? You know, and the thing is, like, I had the thought, it sounds so terrible in my head that I'm hesitating to say it, but I also know that it's true. Here's a beautiful, accomplished, blonde, white woman.
Yes.
Telling you, I can't say this happened, right? This was done to me. If she is not believed, who is believed?
She has the privilege of mainly being believed and accepted.
The only privilege she doesn't have is being a man.
Mm-hmm.
I just keep thinking about now, Karen Horney said, you know, when asked about penis envy, she said, it's not the penis, it's the power.
Yeah.
That's what women want.
It's the truth.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's the privilege, it's the power that comes with it. Which is why I think Matthew Mueller has a micro penis.
That's
and we'll end on that.
He didn't. I'm so sorry.
And scene.
And scene. That was the group text between all three of us, y'all, if you're wondering. The discussion of whether or not he had a micro penis.
And that's from our professional, Dr. Yes. Keeney. She has determined that is to be true.
Yes. The lie detector test has determined that is actually true. That is not a lie. It is at least what I believe.
Yes. We're going to bring in Maury Povich.
Oh my gosh.
And the lie detector
test.
Yeah,
right.
Results are in.
Wow.
Well, thank you so much for coming on with us, Katie. Yeah. We love having you, as usual.
I love being here. I just wish I had more to offer tonight that didn't include micro penises.
Oh, but, my gosh. You know. No, always include the micro penis. No, we're just so thankful to have your feedback, your input, your qualified responses. So thank you so much. And in my
it's been too long.
Yes, it's been too long. So you need to be back a lot sooner than this.
Something. Actually, you guys did send another good idea. So
We got you all. but what do we all hope that everybody gets out of this? I don't even know. Like, I want to say, like, believe people when they tell you things, but it's also like things are so loaded so that people are going to be like, well, I can't, you know, I don't know. I guess believe the people that have the benefit of the doubt. Like,
I think, you know, really the question is, what does it hurt to just start by believing?
Mm-hmm.
And empathize with someone and offer them support truly versus adversarial. I don't believe you because that threatens my theory or my false sense of safety in this world. Also, of course, it was a woman. That's all I have to say about that.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, maybe that's what we end on.
Yes.
Maybe that's the high note, is this amazing police officer who stuck to her guns, knew what was right, and kept pushing until she was heard.
And that it was actually solved, right? I mean, things are much easier with social media, Google, but like, I may or may not have like checked people's garbage as a teenager and been like, so how was the TCBY last night? We will figure things out if we want to.
That's right. Don't fuck with us.
I mean, Google is just a crutch. That's it. If I want to know something, I will find it out. It's just right. Quicker now.
I read a lot of Encyclopedia Brown.
Not stalking.
Anybody else read that as a kid?
That and Nancy Drew.
Yes.
May or may Nancy not Drew have said, my... I'm Katie Stu, not Nancy Drew, but, you know, pretty close.
Nancy so Drew is my jam.
Oh, that's really cute, Katie.
Dork.
It's all right. You're in good company.
Yeah, I think so.
Thank you again, Dr. Katie, for being on with us, sharing your expertise. Even though it's a challenging topic, it's one that we really wanted to cover. And we hope that, you know, you guys just think a little bit differently and that you have a great week. Stay wild.
And Weird Warriors, we love you. This episode was brought to you by Sarah Simone and Amy Baumgartner. Theme song and other music provided by Epidemic Sound. All episodes are mixed, mastered, and produced by me, Sarah Simone. To help us keep making episodes just like this one, consider supporting us on patreon.com/unqualifiedtherapistsinc. Or share us with a friend, relative, coworker, hairstylist, butcher, baker, candlestick maker. Sharing us not only helps keep the mics on, but it furthers our mission in removing the stigma. If you have a mental health journey you'd like to share, email us at unqualifiedtherapists@gmail.com or reach out to us on our website, www.unqualifiedtherapists.com. Until next time, hold on, warrior. We're gonna make it. Say it loud, say it proud, shout it out, take it when we go.